Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello and welcome back to another Radio Roundup from the Sunday Podcast, brought to you guys by sportshoes.com. As always, Matt, not too much to talk about this week. Obviously, we're going to chat about Sound 10K and some of the results in there, some positive results, but also, I guess, the main news is a few people DNFing over in that meet, but a 10,000 is tough. We'll talk about, Matt, you sat down with obviously Trevor and Jenny on Friday night to record the live podcast, which is out now as well. So if you haven't listened to that, people go check that out. And we'll talk about a few athletes aiming for world records. Josh Kerr's talked about aiming for that world mile record. But mate, should we start Friday night? How'd you get on down at House of Sports Shoes?
Oh, mate, fantastic. It was an honour, to be honest. It was an absolute pleasure as well. I think having Trevor and Jenny both on the stage together just allowed them to just bounce off each other and just open up. Probably even more than if we just had one of them, if we just sat down with one of them, which I thought was fantastic. And I guess there was just lots to discuss. We could have gone on for hours, but yeah, we had a little bit of a time limit. I mean, break down that dynamic of the group and just how it's evolved over the last few years as well, with it growing. You know, I had some great chats with Trevor and Jenny just pre the podcast as well, just around coaching and, you know, the detail in which they're going into. And yeah, there's so many nuggets. But I guess one of the things that they've really, from a training perspective, you know, we're going to hawk on that and jump on anything we can get our hands on. You know, they're limited to what they can say. Now they're a Nike group, to be fair, which is interesting, but limited to what they can share. But I think it's the looking at the athletes and seeing if they're not fully recovered, if they're not ready to go again, they don't. And one of the things they do with Keely is that jump test. And, you know, it's taking a jump test every few days to see how you're responding to training. And if you're not hitting a certain marker, then it's like, okay, well, we haven't adapted very well from that session, or yeah, we've really adapted from that session, which I found interesting. And obviously they have, you know, they have a physio screen them and scan over them, you know, before every hard workout as well, or even every day, depending on sort of where they're at. And I think that just allows them to just be so, so consistent. Because I think Trevor identified that basically, if Keely, if Georgia, if anyone in the group can stay healthy for 3-4 years at a time, then there is kind of no limits to what they can achieve. And I think that's especially true with Keely. When you look at how fast she can run, and you know, I think this year was one of the years where she could actually do a full speed block, sort of going into the indoor campaign, and that's why we're seeing her move so well over 400 and move so well over 800.
Yeah, and listening back to that point that you kind of just mentioned there about the jump test, it struck me how much that really related to, I guess, the differences between some of the athletes. Say Keely might perform really well straight after a hard lactic session. So hey, she's probably ready to go again if she needs to, like, i.e. rounds in a championship or whatever it is. Other athletes are cooked, basically, and they need a couple more days. And I think it's testament to them how they've then shaped the week of training all around individuals, rather than saying, now we're a group and we believe in Tuesday, Friday, Sunday, whatever it is. Like Keely and Georgia will be on completely different schedules, but they make the point that their 800 meter PBs outdoors are within a second of each other, and they've got there in different ways, but they have to train a completely different way as well.
That is what they're doing so, so well. And they'll be down at the track and there'll be 8 different sessions going on. So look, we won't talk about, you know, we won't break everything down from this podcast, because go and listen to it. It's, yeah, it was absolutely fascinating. And I just think the culture they've managed to form as well, and the characters they've managed to balance. And I guess for me, I've been impressed with how, you know, Keely was an Olympic silver medalist, 19, 20 years of age, and she's just developed every single year. And when you know, I think Trevor even made the comparisons. You look at others. You look at Athingmu, who is in the same situation. And it's very, very difficult to kind of live up to the hype, I guess. And she's done it. And then and that transition itself is obviously down to Keely, but also heavily down to Trevor and Jenny, how they've managed to just keep her just steadily lifting the game, lifting the bar every single year.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Right, let's chat about Sam Tenken then. Where do you want to start with that one, mate? I mean, Shelby Houlihan wins the women's for starters, but it's tough, isn't it? And this is not us being like
soft start from you. No, it is tough. I think
it's so hard to compete over 10,000 meters on the track. Matt, you've never done one. I've done one, and it was the last track race he ever did because it broke me. When it's your only opportunity, though, it seems like
a real missed opportunity, doesn't it?
Right, yeah. This is part of the problem. Let's cut to the chase, though. I
have a lot of respect for Team Macau. I like them on a personal level, so it is difficult, obviously, to talk about them. But you know, it was a bad night for them. There was a lot of DNFs. In fact, was Scott Beaton the only man who finished the 10,000? I mean. Yeah. Ephraim's dropped out. Rory's dropped out. Ellis Cross has dropped out. So it's obviously Elson was pacing, so he was always going to drop out. But that's on the men's side. And I think Sarah Aston drops out on the women's side in the B race. And then he was pacing. So yeah, Andy Hobdell won't be a happy man. That's going to be a tough flight home for that camp. But you're right. This is part of the problem. The fact it is the only opportunity. And so you have to, like, when you look at this race setup, I think I watched it back. Jesus, went and paid for a flow track monthly pass. Anyway.
Yeah, your mum used to have one that we used to use back in the day.
Yeah. Like, I remember she got it to watch my brother in the NCAAs, and she just never cancelled it. So.
She's cancelled it now about 10 years. So thanks, Kath.
Yeah. It's finally been cancelled. Yeah, so I had to pay out my own money. It's, what was that? Yeah, so I think they had wave lights at 27 flat, and they also had wave lights at 27.20, it seemed, and they had a pacer at 27.20 for a few laps. They drop out, and to be honest, you didn't see much of what that 27.20 group were doing. They were just that awkward distance behind. There were times, I think they were just sharing the lead out in that group. The times where I saw Frederick Rupert, the steepler, pull his weight and do a few laps, and Scott Beattie's just sat in that group and just had a fine day. Like, he's had an absolutely mega day. You know, he's clipped off 66s, 65s, really, for a large part, a couple 66s in there, and then closed in a 60. It's, you know, he's absolutely nailed it, and credit to him. 27.23, great performance for him after last year when he DNF'd and had a tough day. Obviously Valencia, he wanted more from himself, still ran 27.41, but wanted more. And actually, for someone like BT, he needs to, I mean, look, Europeans is going to be tough, but last year, I think, I think that would have pretty much topped the rankings last year. I remember Emil being like top three European when he ran a 27.20.
Birmingham.
But so, and obviously, you know, you're going to have Scrub, you're going to have Gressier, you're going to have Mohamed Abdullahi, who actually won this race, the European, and there's a bunch of Almgren, there's a bunch of other Europeans, Kimeli probably, Kripa maybe, like this. It's going to be stacked, but that's a good, strong result for him. Now he can just get his head down and just be like, right, let's prepare for Birmingham. Whether he'll do that trial is going to be interesting. But yeah, firstly, I think just hats off to Beattie. There's not too much to break down about his race because he's just nailed every split, every lap, and they've sat on the lights, and, you know, he's got himself in a position where he can go run fast. And Dave Malarkey.
Yeah, I was going to say, and just 3 seconds behind him, Dave Malarkey, 27.26, and another fine run from him. So those two in the driving seat, if you like, for the British teams in various competitions. And yeah, so it's paid off for them. Yeah, I guess for Leonard, for Cross, where do they go next? What are your options?
Well, look, Cross, I think it was always going to be tough. He obviously ran a great debut in the marathon and is coming off of that. And probably, you know, the Sound 10 is probably just something for him to just realign his focus and just sort of, you know, when you're getting back into training after a marathon, it can feel quite flat. You know, you've had this huge build up. And then you've got to sort of recalibrate and go, what's next? I don't think Cross will be too bothered about this result. I mean, it, obviously you'll be a bit frustrated and yeah, clearly didn't have it. I mean, when did he drop out? What's that? 2 miles. So he's got 2 miles into this race. Yeah, he probably would have liked to go a lot further with these men because he did have a cracking year there last year. You know, sub 28 last year. But I think Cross is at a stage where that marathon debut was him moving to the road. And so I think I don't know. I actually don't know the answer to this one, but I would predict that he's actually not that fussed about doing the European 10,000 on the track or the European 5,000. I mean, he's off those marks and I'm not sure he's going to get those marks. And if he does, you've got to compete against BT, Malarkey. Like he's not going to beat those guys. If Emil wants to do it, if Diva, if Rowe want to do it. So I think for Cross, he's a road guy and he'll shrug that off pretty quickly. But for Leonard, it's a tough day.
Yeah. Does it mean we might get Leonard attacking some sort of time at the trial race?
Look, you know, I've heard things about Comeback 5000 on the 22nd of May. I've heard, obviously, that's Hoka sponsoring that event. Why would Hoka sponsor that event? Well, probably because they've got, you know, all their stars are based in the UK. So are we going to see them attack a 5000? Yeah, will we see...
Yeah, they'll definitely attack a 5. It's the
it's, reason it's, I say that is because that's a week after the 10. Or less than, it's 5 days after the 10,000.
Yeah.
The 10K trials the 17th of May. That comeback is the 22nd of May. Yeah. I guess the perk Team Macau have is if Leonard needs a bit of help, he could call on BT, depending on what his schedule is, to pace him. He could call on McMurray, Elson, Cross, you know, it's Cross. If those guys wanted to volunteer and pace that 10K trial, I presume they'll allow paces, but there's probably going to be wave lights there. So it probably will set up for an opportunity to get that time, but I don't know. It depends how much this rocks him. If this rocks him and it puts him off, then he's probably just going to go, sod it. Let me just try and run a fast 5K. And, you know, to be honest, I could see Leonard moving to the roads pretty quickly.
Yeah. I think we thought that. And then it's more, I think the last time we spoke to him on the pod, he just seemed very, very keen on the 10,000. Him and Hopdell.
I think there's a real...
And that's what I like.
They want to prove to themselves. You know, I mean, we spoke to them after Valencia, though, right? I mean,
yeah,
they want to prove
we can
themselves.
Do it. And British athletes can do it, not just them. I think it speaks to a lot of other people as well. I think they believe they can be the ones to do it, which is great. And I think we, as fans, we want to see that happen. We want to see people still trying to crack that 10K. Because, yeah, he can move to the roads. He could go run 61. Great. Like, do you mean like?
But what I'm saying is, if he wants to go to Europeans, he might have a better crack at that time if he goes on. It goes and gets a fast 10K. I mean, Almgren's doing another 10K in bloody, I think it's in Scandinavia. If it's not in Norway, it's in Sweden or somewhere like that. He's getting after it. Gressier and Scrub are going for a 5K on the road. So,
there is that option. Yeah,
there is potentially that option. But no. By the way, full disclosure, everyone, we're recording on a Sunday because I'll be at my junior to senior camp on Tuesday working with the next generation. Very much looking forward to that. So we can't record on Tuesday. So I guess we haven't had time to actually figure out and maybe there was something wrong with Rory on the night. Maybe there's something wrong with people on the night. Maybe they will come down with food poisoning. So
if they come out, basically, if news has come out Sunday night, Monday, etc.
Yeah, if that's the case, we...
this is one we prepared earlier.
We look stupid,
So, mate, on the women's side, like I said, Shelby for the win, 30-50, and then not too much to report. Hannah around 32-49. Izzy Fry, DNF. Alex Millard, DNF. So again, seemed like missed opportunities for them. We were kind of hyping this one up as could be the decider for teams and stuff. And actually, after this, we don't really know anything more.
No, and you know, I think again, it's just that they've all got a standard. Like the standard's 32 minutes for women. I mean, the standard 27:50 for the men. I think the problem is that the women's race I have a little bit more empathy for because it was quite scarce, really. It wasn't the deepest field in the world, was it? And yeah, I mean, I haven't had time to watch that one back fully, but yeah, there was some sort of big gaps that were unfolding and pockets of people. And yeah, I think once you get isolated in the 10K, it's tough to really rally and tough to find that drive. But I think the biggest thing is for all these athletes is it just shows that on that night, for one reason or another, the pace was way too hot. And I think that will concern them because they do want to be in a position where they should be able to run, you know, someone like Izzy Frost should be able to run that. Considering what she's run on the road, 31 minutes for a 10K on the track, like that's, you know, it's well within her. And I think that would just concern them that how probably hard they were finding those paces early on. And just, you can see the splits just start to drop away and then gets to a point where enough is enough and the race is gone.
Yeah, certainly is, mate. But they'll be back, and like you say, nothing to worry about in terms of running qualifying time. But they're going to have to rock out now at the trials. You'd assume, or just hold and wait and think, well, just trust that I'm going to get picked, sort of thing. So, it adds another race on the calendar for a lot of these athletes, doesn't it? Or another potential race.
Yeah, scuppers your summer season a little bit. I see the 10K as the week, you know, that's what's a shame for them is if you go and run well last night, you're in the driving seat. Like you said, Scott B's in the driving seat. Mm. He's in a position where he's 30 seconds or 20 odd seconds inside the standard. They're in a position where they can go, okay, actually, we won't go to the 10K trial. We're going to sit back. We're going to try our luck. We're probably going to get selected because there's not time for anyone else to go and run fast now. And surely they're going to put more weighting on the track time. You know, they've actually scalped a few people in that race as well. They, you know, wasn't just like they beat a bunch of nobodies and they were right around. I mean, I saw that Gulveer Singh, you know, he ran sub 60 for the half marathon the other day, you know, puts him away, you know, just behind Woody Kincaid. So there's some big names in there that him and Malarkey are in and around. And that's what's a shame for the women is like all they needed to do was just prove that fitness. They had a nice, solid track time under their belt. 32 minutes is the Euro standard. 31:30, 31:15, like that would have done and get a good time under the belt. And then it's just like, okay, well, you're not auto-selected, but you're in a good spot because only one is guaranteed at the British champs. You know, and that's if the winner even has the time. So I think we're going to see a scenario, this British champ 10K, where, to be honest, all you know, the person who wins doesn't have the time, and they're taking three people off of just performances through the year and rankings.
Yeah, or if you're BT, you think I can go win this race easy. Malarkey's probably going to stay over in the US if he can.
For BT, he might be interested, but
so again, then he just makes sure that he's then like he goes in knowing well I've done everything.
He won't, man. The BT now will want to attack a fast five. I think he will want to double up at this European Championships. And if not, he wants to go and run a 5K PB. And there's some very, very good opportunities around May time. And he's going to want to get stuck in those races. So he's not going to race the 10K trial. No way.
There you have it. Mate, obviously another bit of an upset, if you like. Georgia Bell over in Australia. Host World Indoors, but I don't know how much we can read into that, mate. She just became a world champion. And I thought it was interesting she even ran, to be honest.
Well, she's flown all the way over to Australia day after World Indoors. That's tough. Yeah, so I guess she was always going to be very, very vulnerable. But Hollingsworth, though, what a kick. And actually, just Australia in general, by the way. I mean, Kai Robinson flies last night. He was obviously, he just missed out on the medals last year at the World Champs, fourth in the five. He's in great form. Cam Myers, oh my God, 3:30. Adam Spencer gets a medal at the World Indoors as well. He obviously just looked a bit sluggish yesterday. For obvious reasons, coming off the World Indoors, he had that same travel Georgia Hunter Bell did. But Australian athletics is absolutely crushing it right now. Really is. Super impressed. I mean, Ollie Hall won the 1500 last night, but that was in a casual 3:35, I think. Compare that to watching Cam Myers run. But yeah, it was, if you want to just talk about Hunter Bell's race a little bit more, tactical, I say tactical, you know, what was actually cool is this felt like just old school racing again. Like Pacer took them through 800 and then there was no wave lights. And you had that period where everyone was looking at each other. It's like, what's Georgia going to do? And then actually Hollingsworth takes it up with about 300 to run and bang, she just looks so strong. And Georgia just couldn't get back on her. You know, yes, she's had the travel in, but it kind of does show you, you know, even the best, even someone like Georgia is vulnerable in those positions.
Did you speak to Trevor and Jenny about why she's gone down there? Like what the thinking behind that was?
You know, there's a race there, obviously. not really. You know, it's funny because one of the questions I asked Trevor was that last year he wanted Georgia to double. But he got outvoted and they discussed it as a team and, you know, they had some good reasoning behind it. you know, apparently George's head-to-head wasn't the best against, obviously, Kip Yeagon also wasn't the best against Hull or Welterjace. You know, he went with the 800. You know, I said to Trevor, I was like, you're the coach. Do you not decide? And he said, well, you know, it's their career at the end of the day.
Like, yeah.
Obviously, they devise a plan, but it's, you know, it's the athlete's decision. What race is
it? That's where coaching in running is so different to like your sports, like pretty much every sport, really. I think it's similar in a sense to almost like tennis, where athletes, if you're good, you can hire and fire your coach, unless you're in the NCAA, right? Like they can basically say, well, XYZ coach didn't let me race here, there and everywhere. So I'm going somewhere else.
This is what's interesting about Trevor's take. And obviously I'm probably biased, so I agree with this take, is that actually there should be far more investment into coaches, because look at what he's given British Athletics.
Yeah.
You know, he's given British Athletics, obviously Jenny, you know, back in her day, number of other athletes in and around that era as well. And then he's also now given us, you know, Keely. He's given us Georgia Hunter-Bell. Who knows who will be next on that list. And so, you know, athlete's career is 10 years at the max, but a coach can have, you know, five generations, or, you know, if they're coaching for 40, 50 years and the athletes they can produce. Like, you look at Jerry Schumacher, you look at what he did for American distance running. You know, he was just producing amazing runners after amazing runners.
Don't forget Alberto, mate.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. And obviously in sports, like in, well, as far as I know, obviously like swimming and cycling, there is like centralized British coaches. But I always see that as a bit of a, I agree, there should be the investment there. There should be like those jobs there, if you like. It's so hard, because it does limit the pool of people who can actually access that. And what's so great about athletics in this country is that you can kind of come out of nowhere still. I know it's getting probably less and less, but you can kind of come out of some random group with a coach who you've worked with since you were 10, and they've grown with you and actually learned the sport, and they take people to maybe Europeans or something like that. And I think that is what you would, I guess, miss, maybe.
Yeah. And it, you know, running has huge opportunity, but then it also has limitations. And it is always trying to get that trade off, isn't it? That's where all the debates spark from. It's like, oh yeah, this, it'd be great if this problem was solved, but then, that would then, create another problem. And Hunter-Bell gets beat. Cam Myers looks seriously impressive. 3:30 in March. I mean, outdoors, you know, I know he had a small indoor campaign. Missed the world indoors. But you do worry, don't you? Because you're like 3:30, and this was a solo last 800 as well. Like, this is
what I would say, mate.
Worth a bloody 3:28 in any European track, in any Diamond League with wave lights. Easily.
What I would say for Australian athletes, even the ones who compete internationally, you can't like think of it as March.
What do you mean?
Well, because they're the season they've grown up with is so much earlier.
Yeah, anyway. But he's got no... Cam Myers has no reason to fixate on the Australian season, because
I'm not saying they do, but I do think you'll always see them run well early. Isn't there trials?
They have got
Australian champs is super early as well.
Yeah,
so
they've got their national
even
champs.
Even in Olympic years, they have to basically peak to an extent for that nice and early. So
they do now.
I would say, I think you can't take as much look at like the time of year for those sorts of athletes.
Maybe someone like Myers just looks and goes, well, look, really, yeah, there's that World Ultimate Championships. Does it matter that much if you're not there? No. And he might just look, let's just rip this year. Let's just run fast. But a boy looks ready to absolutely fly now. Like 3:30 soloing that second half. Like I said, that's worth a 3:28 at least in a Diamond League scenario. You know, Josh Kerr's out there talking about the world record. I mean, they're going to have to put a stop to all these youngsters coming and snipping at his heels.
Yeah, but they just won't be as consistent as him. That's the thing. Like, they'll run some good times. And yeah, they might at some point, but it's the...
Do you think he does it?
Kerr.
3:42.
I don't know. He's getting some special spikes and a special race suit, apparently. So... What do they call it? Project 222 or something like that?
Project 222, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. If you set it up well, I've always thought that...
What's Jakob got to say about this, man?
Kerr's doing it a smart time. He's doing it when he knows Jakob. He can't be like, yeah, I want a piece of that.
kicking him when he's
imagine
down.
Imagine they're both in shape, and then Kerr can't say something like that because Hocker and Yak, or both of them, which were like, "Yeah, I want to be in the race," and he can't basically, and they'll put it on social media, and then he can't say no. But I rate it because I think Kerr, he has always been about the been about the winning, but this is good timing for him to go chase a time. He's smart like that.
His agents are smart like that. Because that's going to sell all the tickets to their London Diamond League, July the 18th. Before the Commonwealth Games, before the Europeans, after the British champs.
Reminded me. I was going to say, did you see about Johnson Grand Slam track?
What, paying his money back?
Yeah. What is going on there? There's so much we don't know about that.
I guess I just have nothing to say because I don't really know what's happening, to be honest.
No.
But it's sad because, you know, they were trying to do something new, something innovative. And actually, I think it was a small glimpse of, but obviously he fucked it big time. But it's a small glimpse of how World Athletics respond to being challenged. I think they were, you know, they're Diamond Leagues. Obviously, you got the World Athletics Ultimate. They're aggressive. They want to keep a stranglehold on this sport. Talking about strangleholds on this sport, mate. London Marathon. Are they getting silly? Is this too much? 100,000 people to race or letting in 100,000 people over 2 days. For me, that is just going to make the marathon not special. I appreciate there's 1 million people who want to run this thing, but you know, how would they split it? You know, was it men and women on different days? There's a few rumors. London Marathon actually haven't commented on any of this, but the mayor's backed it. And, you know, for me, this is, of course, you're giving all these people opportunities, but you're also just making a shit ton of money. Let's be honest. That's the
reason. Yeah. Yeah. It's so tough, mate, isn't it? Because I guess it's just how you filter.
I think it waters it down. And are you going to get the same crowd? Are you going to get the same atmosphere in London over a weekend? Maybe you will. No. Maybe you just have an absolute.
Well, I think because most of the crowd is people watching people they know. So if you've got 50,000 people on one day, 50,000 on the other, you're still going to get a pretty good crowd.
Yeah.
I think if they can do it safely, I mean, that's the main thing. And that's why
mate. I mean, they've probably followed all the health and safety guidance in the world, but I just think it will start to just make it a bit like, oh God, it's just that, you know, it's a mass fun run, which I guess, to be honest, is probably what it is, isn't it? It is a mass fun run.
Yeah. I guess the issue is obviously like, say you're running, I don't know, it depends where they put the actual race, right? Like all the elite races, sorry, in terms of like where they sit and they split across 2 days as well.
I mean, there's still, you know, out of all the people who run the London Marathon.
And results wise, are you then going to put like just chip times from both days? Because like one day could be like so much better weather than the other, etc. And it's bad enough kind of having, like, I get why we have chip times, right? But in terms of like, it's not actually, if you start 2 hours later, you're not in the same race, ultimately, anyway.
No, weather conditions are different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess initially I'm against it, but I actually don't really know why I'm against it. I'm just like,
But like you say, for most people, if I'm someone who's like trying to get into London every year and I just can't, I've just not managed to.
And you're gagging to run London Marathon.
Yeah, then amazing, right? I've still only got a 10% chance. So I think you can obviously do charity routes or obviously the people running for more performance can get in. With their age times and stuff, they're getting quicker and quicker though, aren't they? The good for age and all that stuff.
It's a direct impact to the shoes, just because the shoes, like they have made the marathon so much easier.
Yeah.
So, you know, not just
easier for worse athletes.
Yeah, recreational runners, yeah.
Yeah, because the difference it makes in your form and stuff, like,
It's crazy.
Great product, right?
Like, it's a risk though, because there is huge demand now, but in 10 years' time, you know, will there be, like, once you're 2 days, can you drop back down to 1 day?
Yeah, because that would seem like a massive, like, step backwards.
Yeah, yeah,
And like, yeah, you're right, man. Running is booming. Like,
it's booming. It's absolutely booming.
Absolutely booming. And it can't last forever. Like, it's not.
It might do. We hope it does. Yeah. But yeah, I think I just thought of it from an elite perspective. And I was like, actually, but I guess that's a very close-minded way to look at it. But I was like, it will overshadow the elite race. Are you ready for
it? I think it already does.
Yeah, it already does.
Well, for most people.
Yeah.
You look at what they choose to show on the coverage on the main BBC channel.
Yeah.
That's clearly a decision. Like, obviously, look, I question a lot of coverage of a lot of athletics, but it's clearly a decision based off what people want to see. And that is interviews with people running the race and stopping for an interview halfway, like primarily. And that's great. Like, if people are interested in that. So I think that is the primary focus of it anyway. It is for everyone. It's not about the elite races, really.
It's true. It's true.
Mate, I think that pretty much wraps us up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, Josh Kerr. Yeah, I mean, like I said, we're recording on Sunday at Berlin Halves today. I know we've got a few Brits doing that, so apologies if we don't cover that result. It would be impossible for us to recover it today, but I'm sure we'll be impressed nonetheless. And we start to just build towards London now. I guess everything is going to be finding out news ahead of the big one. We've had bit of a soft launch with this 10,000 and Brits going for qualifying times and just looking to get times on the board ahead of the summer. Didn't go so well, but let's see what happens in London and the rest. So yeah, enjoy the Trevor and Jenny podcast and we'll catch you next week.
Yeah, make sure you listen to that, guys, if you haven't, on all the usual platforms. But yeah, thanks for listening to us. Catch you guys very, very soon.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.